Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Confidence ain't great. My confidence ain't great because you telling me you're going to have, you know, 22 teams full of players follow all the rules? Like, when we have 100% freedom, everybody don't follow all the rules. So, I mean, I don't have much confidence, but hopefully, you know, it'll be handled to a point where, like, we're not putting everybody at risk or in a dangerous position.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Damian Lillard. You got to love his honesty. And on the line is Radio.com Sports NBA Insider Brian Scalabrine, co-host of Scal and Pals and all NBA podcasts. Subscribe to Scal and Pals today, wherever you get your favorite podcast. And Brian joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Brian.
I'm doing well. You guys?
We're doing okay. You know, we're looking at the numbers like everyone else and just kind of raising an eyebrow. And, boy, it's scary stuff. And if that wasn't enough, I read Sean Devaney, longtime guy. We've had him on the program. Good dude. He wrote for Forbes where he quoted a Dr. Tim Hewitt, who was an ACL expert out of Ohio, had been an NBA consultant, and Dr. Hewitt predicted after the lockout that you could see 2, 3, 4 times the injury rate in the following season or seasons, and the NBA saw 11 players go down with serious knee ligament injuries, including Derrick Rose. Unfortunately, he was accurate in those predictions, and he said he sees the same type of issue coming up here after the play stoppage and guys, you know. And I've got to be honest with you, Brian, I was surprised that more players didn't have kind of places to work out. You know, it's great when you got guys with their own gym on the horse show, but the idea that Giannis, among others, doesn't have any way of working out in the off season if you're in lockdown, I guess no one imagined it could come. But I was surprised at the number of players that didn't have a hoop around them. And I hope that doesn't mean guys driving are going to suffer more tendon or ligament injuries.
Well, I wonder if it'll happen in this short amount of time. And it could. I get it. Like, I don't think you should go that long without playing basketball. But don't remember, just because NBA players said they're not out or they didn't put it on Instagram like they typically do, doesn't mean these guys are not finding gyms all over the place. I know for a fact there are players that are getting access to gyms early in the morning, late at night. No one's around. They come in, they get their work, they get out. They're being safe and all that kind of stuff. But like NBA players, especially players gearing up to win a championship, like the Lakers, the Bucks, and you know, even like the Boston Celtics, Philadelphia 76ers. These guys are finding gyms to work out in.
Brian, given what's happened in the past week with the Nets and the Nuggets and, you know, two teams that are involved in the bubble and reporting to Orlando, what has it done to your confidence that this season will come off with as scheduled and that they will play basketball in Orlando?
I think that we'll play. I'm pretty confident that we'll play the eight games. I'm actually confident that we'll get to the first round of the playoffs. I just don't know what the number is. What is the number in which Adam Silver pulls the plug on this thing? Is it 30? Is it 40? Is it 50? Whatever it is. Or is it no matter what, we need to plow through and push on? Remember, I think there's a little bit of pressure on Adam Silver. When he shut down that game in Oklahoma City where the guy ran on the court and it's like, next thing you know, the NBA is postponed, the world sort of followed. The United States followed. The U.S. is opening up, and Adam Silver now is trying to make this thing happen. It's just a decision that I'm not sure what the NBA is going to do about it. Is it, no matter what, we have to make sure that the players don't get the coronavirus? Or is it, hey, guys, we got to figure out a way to live with this and plow through this because eventually this is going to be a part of our world? I'm not sure what's the internal conversations happening with the NBA, but I think we'll get the answers as this thing goes. And the idea that creating a bubble is going to prevent every player from getting it, that's where I think that the NBA is wrong. I don't think this thing is controllable. I do think it will seep into the bubble, not as much as it would be if they were out and about just living their normal life. But I do believe that some players inside the bubble will get it, and it'll be interesting how fast it spreads.
You know, given the nature of the sport, Brian, do you think that it might be the players that get it as opposed to the number of players who get it? Do you know what I mean? If you think of some of the stars going down, I don't know that those teams can win championships any longer, and maybe that ends up being a deciding factor.
Sure. I do think when people ask about the asterisk question, hey, is there an asterisk on this championship? If no one gets the coronavirus, then I don't think there's an asterisk on this championship. I think this championship's going to be tough. But let me lay out a scenario for you. You know, the Bucks are playing Toronto. It's the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Bucks are up 3-1. And next thing you know, Giannis goes down. He's out for 14 days. There's not an asterisk on that win right there. Now, it's one thing like for a guy to get injured. Like, you know, we saw Kevin Durant last year with the Achilles tendon. I believe that there's a wear and tear in the NBA, and it's all part of it. Like, accidents aren't freak accidents. A lot of times there's a reason for that, and it could be, you know, the toll it's taken on your body. But the coronavirus is something that's so different. You guys watched The Last Dance. You saw what Michael Jordan did in Utah with the flu game. He just plowed through it. There's no plowing through this. And what's even more strange is a player could play and be asymptomatic and not even know he has it, yet it's such a huge virus disease and something where you're going to have people pulled out for 2 weeks when they actually have no symptoms. So it's nothing like mental toughness where you can just push through. It just doesn't work like that. So if one of the major stars, and I agree with you with your question, one of the main stars comes up with it, LeBron, Giannis, you know, even Embiid or Ben Simmons or Kemba Walker or you know, Kawhi Leonard, any of these guys, if they get it, I think I'm going to have to put an asterisk on this championship because I want to see the stars out there.
Brian, ESPN is reporting that to finish the season over 3 months is going to cost $150 million for the bubble concept, and this on top of projected losses of more than $1 billion in revenue because of the coronavirus. And I just wonder, is there a growing segment of the NBA world or population? How big is the segment of that world that feels like, is this worth it? Because that is a lot of money for something that may not even be able to, as we've discussed, finish, see it through and to its completion.
Yeah, but there's a lot of money in TV as well. Like every time these guys play a game, ESPN, ABC, they have advertising dollars. And if it does go all the way to the end, there's a lot of money to be made as well. So I know it's one thing. I understand it does seem like a lot of money, but it wouldn't be free if we were normally living our life and players were traveling all over the place and staying in hotels and everything like that. So there is a cost to playing games. I actually think the cost might be less without the airplane travel. Like those private jets, you know, $50,000 an hour, and for a playoff series, you're flying around, it does add up. So that's a big number to say, wow, that's amazing. I can't believe how much this is. But like I said, if nothing went wrong and we just continued our season, that number would also be a pretty substantial now when you think about, you know, the playoffs and what all that stuff costs. But the NBA, it's more important for them to do this for many reasons. One, they really want to try to push the season off next year so they can get to a point where you can have 20,000 people in an arena. And the only way to do that was to try something like this. You can't stop the season in March and then pick up the season sometime in January, hopefully thinking that there's a vaccine where now we can have fans again. I know the NBA for certain wants fans in the building for game one. Now, it might not happen, but their goal is to play as many games with fans as possible. And if you look at this scenario, if they cancel the season, can you see 20,000 people going to an arena on November 1st for opening day in the NBA? I just don't see it.
This is a very minute and silly question, but I nonetheless am going after it because it really annoyed me. According to Bobby Marks, the NBA front office insider for ESPN, he said that the league is going to now do some proration with their bookkeeping because of the stoppage with coronavirus. So a guy like Chris Dunn, who was on the Bulls, he was facing a qualifying offer of $4.6 million after getting injured and not starting any longer. And, you know, frankly, the team probably would have pulled the plug on starting him because they're not going anywhere and they wouldn't want to pay more than $4.6 million. Maybe that's still a decision for them. But now it's prorated to $7.1 million because of the coronavirus stoppage. Now I think they don't bring the player back. And it just seems like that could cost him in his career as opposed to them kind of just understanding he was hurt and maybe the team had a decision. I'm not saying any of this is fair, but when you make kind of general rules like that, don't they affect you maybe in negative ways?
Sure, a lot. And when you – a scenario like that, the reason they're making a rule like this is not necessarily for Chris Dunn, but it might be for – you know, 30 other players and how this whole thing works. It's a nightmare. It's a logistical nightmare when you stop a season in the middle. It's a logistical nightmare. It's a logistical nightmare what Daryl Morey did at the beginning of the season. And you're talking about, you know, maybe close to $1 billion or $2 billion not coming in from China. The NBA operates in a certain way where everyone assumes that they're going to get paid a certain amount. 51% goes to the players and all these other things. But when you add a scenario like this and all the money just stops, you can't continue to pay guys a certain amount and different things have to happen. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. And it'll be really interesting what happens to all the free agents next year because the cap might drop $8, $9, $10 million, which means not that it's like, so what's the difference between 118 and 109? It's just that teams won't have any space to sign guys. If, you know, people count on the cap continuing to climb. And this thing is, if you were a free agent and you were gearing up for next year and you were thinking this is going to be my big payday, you got screwed.
Brian, in the NHL, when that resumes, there's a feeling like, okay, you know, anyone can win this because the randomness of hockey makes it really fun in the postseason and that kind of playoff intensity can bring out the best in average teams. I don't know if the same is true in the NBA, and I don't think that it is, but I do wonder if you expect some teams that might not be expected to make runs might surprise us. And if these playoffs in this sort of unusual setup, it could have a team that comes out of nowhere and challenges for either a conference title or the NBA title.
Yeah. So I'm Philadelphia is one that's on my hot list just because they were 29-2 at home. They were great. Ben Simmons is great when the fans get behind him but he also really struggles managing games on the road. He just, like, doesn't call a good game, like a real point guard, like a Chris Paul or a Rondo or LeBron James. Like, those guys really do have a good pulse on the game. Ben Simmons, he lacks that area of his game. But in this environment, so am I looking at Ben Simmons as a player on the road who really struggles, or am I looking at Ben Simmons, the guy who really dominates at home and gets up and down and his physical dominance is absolutely, you know, push the Sixers through. So they're one team that stands out. Another team that stands out is Miami Heat. Think about it. You know, like the sexy word nowadays that every GM and coach and everyone, players now talk about is culture. Culture this, culture that. We got to have the right culture. Well, the Miami Heat have culture. That's, like, I mean, they've had culture for 20 years. And so far so that if you miss a Zoom workout and you're on the Miami Heat, you don't get a call from the strength coach. You get a call from Pat Riley. And Pat Riley's like, what are you doing? And Pat Riley has proven in the past, if you're not about what we're about here, I will get rid of you and I'll find someone else that's about what we're about. So the Miami Heat, who, if you listen to all the messages coming out of Miami, it is, man, I can't wait to do this. Where everyone's like, man, I'm not sure I want to go. I'm not sure I want to do this. I'm not sure I want to do that. Miami Heat's like, man, this is going to be great. I can't wait to get back to hooping. Man, I've been working out on the Zoom calls. I'm in the best shape. I feel rested. I feel ready to make a run. We feel like we can beat anybody. That's the messages coming out of Miami. So I keep my eye out on Miami and see how they play. And I just keep my eye out on Philly. As much of a disappointment they've been this season, this whole thing could change. Remember, they were 29-2 at home, which is a ridiculous record. So those are the two teams I'm really curious to see. Not necessarily the regular season when that ends, but when the playoffs start.
Brian, thanks a ton. We appreciate your time as always. Great stuff.
Thanks, Gal.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
That was Radio.com Sports NBA Insider Brian Scalabrine, co-host of Scal and Pals, an all-NBA podcast. And you can subscribe to Scal and Pals today wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We're going to keep it up. We're going to have some fun. We're going to keep talking a little bit of White Sox, I believe, with Vinny Duber. I can't wait to do that. We'll do it next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Work ethic has been there, and he actually has stepped it up a notch with it. More than anything, it's just focus. I think that he's understanding, again, the things that he needs to do in order to continue to improve, and he certainly made adjustments. I mean, that was a big swing for him in terms of, in particular, strikeouts. And then understanding he can be aggressive early in the counts, still be able to, you know, to work counts, get on base. He just had tremendous growth. And then on top of that, when you're looking at him play third base, you realize that he had a chance. I know that was the next question that we had last year, was once we moved him from second to third, was he going to be able to do it? And he has.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That is the voice of Ricky Renteria. That's him back in March talking about Yoan Moncada. And Moncada did a Zoom call yesterday with Billy Russo, and we are delighted to welcome in Vinny Duber. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Vinny. How are you?
Hey, Vinny.
I'm good, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Well, we're living the dream. It's just how it works. And let me ask you, you know, Moncada, boy, he had a good year last year. Boy, expectations are sky high. And, you know, even though it was obviously through Billy, the translator, I liked what he said. I liked that he talked about the Twins being the team they got to beat. It seems like he is he's just ready to take another step in his career. And that is an exciting thing to think about.
Yeah, I mean, the jump we saw between 2018 and 2019 was just gigantic. And, I mean, I think he finally lived up to the hype that he arrived with. I mean, you got to remember, this guy was the number one prospect in baseball at one point, and he's kind of the first guy to come up with that hype. And now we've had Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert since, and that hype has kind of grown each time. But Yoan Moncada was the first one to arrive, and he's really – I mean, last year he evolved into probably the best all-around player on the team. You played that Ricky soundbite and talking about how good he was at third base. I thought he was excellent defensively at third base, playing that position for the first time in the major leagues. So, I mean, you look at a guy who in 2018 struggled so mightily with all those strikeouts. He goes to work in the offseason, much like Tim Anderson did, and revamps his approach, and he's a totally different player. And, yeah, if you like the kind of humility that you heard yesterday on that interview, that's got to be Jose Abreu rubbing off on him, because that's what he sounded like yesterday. Just take it one day at a time. You know, we'll do our work. Hopefully we'll beat the Twins. Just kind of stay focused and not get too huge there. That's got to be his locker buddy rubbing off on him there.
There's some humility, Vinny, but there's also audacity. How would you describe what he was wearing? You have to have some confidence to pull that one off.
It was a shirt that I have struggled to explain, to be quite honest with you. It looks like it was trying to replicate a leopard wearing a Bulls jersey. Like I said, it's difficult to put into words. If you go on Twitter and try and find it, the visual might be better than me trying to explain it without it.
And the hair was just yeah. All over the place.
Yeah, he's got a style of his own, and Luis Robert does too. I mean, I think you've got a couple of young guys there that are going to be as interesting to look at as they are to play baseball.
You know, one of the things he said, and it makes a lot of sense, and he said it before, so it didn't surprise me, but he doesn't like the cold. He doesn't like hitting in the cold. He said that that the weather is going to be like it is in Cuba, and he felt that that was a big plus for the White Sox.
Yeah, and I think you see really every year with a lot of hitters, be they from you know, those countries where they don't get cold weather, or even from parts of this country where they don't get cold weather. Hitters usually tend to start slow when they're playing in April and May, especially when they're playing in Chicago in April and May, where it can be kind of a carryover from winter sometimes. This year, those guys are not going to have to worry about that. They're getting into the swing of the season in the weather that suits them best. So especially these guys who are from Cuba and the Dominican Republic and other countries where the weather is hot and warm all the time, they're going to be loving these beginning of the year conditions, if you can call them that.
So, Vinny, as best as you can tell, what's going on today and tomorrow at Guaranteed Rate Field? Are players reporting directly there? Do you know if any are being delayed on the way? What is the status of the White Sox as they get ready to start spring training 2.0?
Well, from what I can gather and looking at what other teams have been doing across the league, these 2 days, yesterday and today, were dedicated to testing. And it's a big job that these teams have to do to get these guys tested for COVID-19. And obviously we're expecting to see some high numbers when all that testing is done. Now, that obviously is comparable to what has been announced from the NBA and the NHL, where I think the positive test rate was around 5%. But because those rosters aren't as big as the ones we're seeing in Major League Baseball, those numbers themselves, the raw numbers, were not so alarming perhaps to many. You know, you see in the NBA, they had, I think, 16 players, something like that. Well, baseball's got, 1,800 guys if every team goes all the way to 60 with their player pools, which obviously we've seen they have not yet. Those numbers will fill in probably as time goes on with those taxi squads. But that's a lot of guys to be tested, and even if it stays at that 5% number, that number is going to be big, perhaps upwards of getting toward 100. Those numbers, I think, are going to jump out at people. But once they're able, if they're able to have these camps in full, you're going to see guys abiding by these measures that have been put in place by Major League Baseball. And that means guys training at different times of the day, staggered workouts. You're not going to see those pictures like we see from Arizona every spring where it's a big group of guys running across an outfield. You're going to see guys working out at a safe social distance, and there's going to be a lot of changes to players' daily routines, daily lives, based on where they're able to be in the clubhouse, where they're able to be in the stadium, in the dugout, on the field. So it's going to take some getting used to, and I think that's what we're going to be learning over the next few days, these first few days of workouts, is how are these players adjusting to those measures.
It's I don't think it's any kind of stretch of the imagination to say the White Sox could be better as they report now than they were when they broke camp. And by that, I mean, obviously, Michael Kopech, time passing, up and running, and, of course, Carlos Rodon on that roster as well. So we don't know. I would think Kopech might actually be in the rotation, but I don't know about Rodon.
Yeah, we'll see. I think that's the big thing that this layoff has created for the White Sox, is it's made them a better team on paper, at the very least, than they were back in March, because, as you mentioned, those pitchers are healthy. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what comes of all that, because Michael Kopech was not expected to start the season, a normal season, on the opening day roster, because they wanted to send him to the minor leagues and strengthen his arm, that he hasn't thrown in a competitive game other than that one inning in the Cactus League in more than a year. So you're talking about a guy who might have needed to get back into the swing of things, get back used to pitching a game situation. Well, there is no minor league season now, and the good news is there's been three more months, and he's three more months removed from Tommy John. And so, yeah, he might be in the rotation, but I think Rick Renteria has a lot of options in what he can do with that pitching staff. You mentioned Carlos Rodon. He could be in the mix. What about minor league guys like Dane Dunning or Jimmy Lambert? Both those guys had Tommy John surgery and have been on the road to recovery as well. Maybe they're part of the mix here. So it's going to be interesting to see how Ricky uses this pitching staff, because they have depth in the starting rotation. And that means maybe you're going to see what baseball folks call piggybacking, which is, one starting pitcher for three or four innings and then another starting pitcher for three or four innings. And the White Sox have the tools to be able to do that. Maybe Michael Kopech is a late inning guy. Maybe they decide, hey, we see him as a starter long term, no doubt. But in this one weird season, we're going to throw him out there and let him go late in games. And perhaps he can use his great gifts to be a really effective weapon there. So there's so many options. And I think Rick Renteria even said the other day that he could see, putting the opener on the table, which is hilarious because it's something he's been vocally opposed to in the past. So I think you're going to see a big upheaval of the way managers use pitching staffs this year.
Vinny, if expectations were high when play was suspended in March, I think they're higher now for reasons you guys just talked about, the pitching, the surplus of starters, and also because you're not dealing with the cold weather and the opportunity to get off to a fast start for a lot of these young players. And maybe that is something that is, helps the White Sox start fast. So how challenging will it be for a young team to deal with the weight of expectation?
I think these White Sox are very ready to go. They're ready to stop losing. They're ready to get into contention mode. And that was really the talk, not just in spring training, but dating all the way back to the end of last season, whether you were talking to Rick Renteria or Lucas Giolito or Tim Anderson, some of these guys who have been here a little bit now and have a real belief in what they're doing. I mean, heck, Jose Abreu had been talking all the way back to the early portions of last summer about how great he thinks this team is going to be moving forward, how much he wanted to be a part of it. And now obviously he will be with that contract he got in the offseason. But I think inside that clubhouse, there's plenty of confidence. There's plenty of faith in what they're going to be able to do, because there's been such a long runway, right? So they've been able to learn together, to build together, and to kind of start realizing their potential together. As you saw, a lot of those guys, especially toward the end of last season, really, really figure it out. And now they're just getting more reinforcements. They're getting Luis Robert. They're getting Dallas Keuchel. They're getting Yasmani Grandal. So I think the excitement level is high. The thing is, there's still questions, right? There's still, things that they need to figure out. And one of the things that I've been interested in seeing coming up with this short season is it's a team that even their most recent regular season, they lost 89 games. So they've got to learn how to win. And over the course of a six-month season, you could see that happening easily. Is it going to be able to happen over the course of a two-month season? That's a very interesting thing coming up. But inside that clubhouse, they've got all the confidence in the world, and I think that will help them.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I am pretty pumped up about their chances, and I think that part of the reason is when you start contemplating who's going to have the breakout year, you have a bunch of candidates, right? And I mean, you know, Moncada, we're not saying that he didn't already have it, but he could take another step. Eloy could go crazy on this thing. Louis Robert, God knows what the upside is for him or what to expect from him. I think there's a lot of reasons to be pretty excited about this group.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we saw it with those younger guys in September of last year when Jimenez and Moncada and Tim Anderson were just unreal. I mean, their numbers from that last month of the season were absolutely fantastic. I think Eloy Jimenez is only going to get better. Last year, you saw him, you know, as for the 31 home runs as a rookie and for how great he ended the year, last year was not necessarily this runaway success for him. There is a lot of room for him left to grow, as the White Sox would have told you all last season. He, this offseason, admitted that he was trying too hard at the beginning of the year. And so it's that adjustment time that maybe gives me a little skepticism on whether Luis Robert is going to, you know, hit the ground running and set the world on fire right away with such a short amount of time to make those adjustments. But Eloy Jimenez, who's now got an entire Major League season under his belt, I think has there's a big reason to believe that he could have a really big season.
Vinny, is Yermín Mercedes or Zach Collins the third catcher, and will Nick Madrigal make the opening day roster?
I'll answer the second one first. I think Nick Madrigal will be on the team this year. I don't think he will make the opening day roster. Service time, which is something, again, that the White Sox constantly say is not part of their decision-making process. It is still a reality of baseball, and it is still a reality in the 60-game season. So I think you might see, you know, what we've been talking about for years with prospects, not just with the White Sox, but across the game, and specifically with Chris Bryant on the north side of town now 5 years ago. I think you could see that with Nick Madrigal, where he would potentially wait a week or two and then come up and join the big league team. I did a roster prediction the other day, and I thought that it made sense to put both Mercedes and Collins on the team just because of what they can do with the bat. You could see some different substitutions, some increased use of the bench, perhaps in this short season where you've got more guys at your disposal. That being said, there's these taxi squad rules where when they go on the road, they're going to need to bring three players with them who aren't part of the roster, and one of those players has to be a catcher. So if you have four catchers on your major league roster, that means you need a fifth then for the taxi squad. So that could complicate things as well. But you don't need to worry about these guys maybe not getting as much playing time as you thought, because if you keep them off the active roster, they're not getting any playing time at all with no minor league season. So I think Mercedes probably had an edge back in March because he was swinging the bat really well, and Collins could benefit from AAA playing every day. But now the way things have been thrown into the air here, I think that both of those guys have a chance at making the roster, and it really kind of might depend on what the White Sox see from them over the course of these couple weeks.
Vinny, thanks a ton. Really love your work, man.
Good stuff.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
That's Vinny Duber. I love the subject, too, to be honest with you, David. I'm not going to lie to you.
You're excited, aren't you?
I am, man. I'm allowing myself to have a moment here and there because I need
it. That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
We're going to bring in Anthony Heron next. We'll talk about the Bears. We'll talk about the NFL. Maybe we'll ask an Iowa question. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
You know what? If I'm an individual player, and I don't condone this, and I think it's reckless, I think it's stupid, I think it's dumb, but if you're a fringe guy and you know that a positive test in training camp isn't just going to get you shut down for 3 weeks, it's going to get you cut, I can't help but wonder whether some of these guys are thinking about deliberately exposing themselves now so they can get the antibodies, because people think if you have the antibodies, you're good to go. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
What is going on with the SEC teams down south, and Clemson included, who's obviously an ACC team? A lot of their players are coming down with COVID-19, oddly enough. So are they trying to herd immunity their teams, so these guys can get sick now, as opposed to getting sick during the college football season, if in fact there is one?
What?
What? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What?
Yeah. That you heard Mike Florio. He was on with Dan Bernstein in June. And, of course, Boomer was on WFAN. Ugh. Hard to imagine people would actually act that way, but I wouldn't put it past some of the people you hear from. At any rate, let's bring in Anthony Heron. He joins us now on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Anthony, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Anthony.
Molly, David, good morning to both of you, man. We are consuming a lot of new information in a variety of ways in 2020.
Boy, I'll tell you what. I mean, you know, we had a chance to talk to Tommy Hotovy yesterday, and he described his battle, the ordeal that he went through with COVID-19. And I got to tell you, you would be – and I don't care how young you are, how healthy you are, what your background might be. You could be, you know, genetically cloned with perfect DNA. And I'm telling you, you don't want this. And you'd be a fool to try to get it. And your coach would be a criminal if he was trying to herd immunize everybody. I just think that some of the stuff out there, and I don't doubt some of it, to be honest with you, Anthony, but it's insane.
It is. On the SiriusXM Big Ten show that I do, last week I ended up bringing on a guy named Dr. Bill Maurice. He's the president of the Mayo Clinic Labs, because for me, you know, you guys obviously go through it every morning here where you're communicating information about folks and there's not sports going on and there's plenty of real things happening. So we're talking about everything and we're trying to communicate what I'm reading, what I'm talking to about folks, what my perception of things would have been as an athlete or a coach at that point from my past experience. But at a certain point, it seemed important. Let me just get an actual doctor. Let me get somebody who deals in this stuff on a daily basis on the show. And, you know, Dr. Maurice was legitimately, I suppose, sort of glasses half full about the thought that the fall sports season in college could end up coming to play. That being said, he did have a lot of very real things from an informational standpoint about the gravity of COVID-19 and how the medical industry has been dealing with it and still learning about it throughout this. And that's one of the things I think that, unsurprisingly, people tend to overreact to, where a few months ago, certain information seemed different, was consumed different, was communicated differently than it is now, especially related to masks. It would kind of probably be the hottest button thing that the medical industry has reshaped or evolved on. And Dr. Maurice said that whether it was with his team at the Mayo Clinic, whether you're talking about the CDC, the WHO, the recognition now that masks can be effective are in a lot of ways effective. Like at the Mayo Clinic, he told me that initially they weren't necessarily pushing staff and patients to 100% of the time have masks on. And what they recognized was once they became more strict, more stringent with making sure everyone had masks, everyone had face shields, pretty much in every phase of their communication, they were able to greatly diminish the amount of transmission that took place of COVID-19 within the walls there at the Mayo Clinic, and kind of the one spot where they do still tend to see some transmission within their walls is the spots where folks are maybe a bit more casual near the front door or in the break room, where maybe you take your mask down, you're drinking something, you're eating something, you're communicating with folks in a casual atmosphere. But things like that I think, you know, all of us, and especially those who are still a bit more pessimistic about the information with some of these things, it seems to make sense to trust the doctors. And I think that's where, both at the professional and the collegiate level, everyone needs to get medical professionals involved in that communication cycle with their teams, as opposed to just trusting coaches and the standard administrators that these athletes see every day to be the ones communicating that.
It's a good point, Anthony, and I think, much like you see maybe in the federal government, but with the NCAA failing to apply a universal standard for these programs to follow, what you've seen is kind of a hodgepodge, haphazard approach to bringing players back onto their respective campuses. And I think that's probably in part, you know, why you see some of these outbreaks. They came back too soon, or they came back without having precautions or any guidelines to follow. When you leave it up to the respective schools or conferences, you're going to get the results that we have gotten. So I guess in that context, where's your confidence level that there will be a college football season this fall without having it to move it to 2021?
I'm not nearly as confident we'll see college football this fall as I am NFL football. Now, my various college football employers, everyone's, you know, moving forward as though there's going to be a season. Everyone's hopeful of that. But the NFL, not only just the financial ramifications of it, but of course you're just dealing with 32 different franchises and the players for that, as opposed to and especially one way I've tried to be fair with the NCAA as much as I criticize them on this particular topic, where they're not just dealing with the 130 football bowl subdivision teams. You do have the FCS, or what we used to call 1AA teams. You got Division II, Division III. They oversee all of college athletics. So all the biggest decisions and the ones we tend to report on most are, of course, with the major programs, especially now what's thought of as those 60 Power 5 teams. But they do have to have guidelines in place for everyone. But I think that, and what I've been talking about on my show, is communicating and putting in place a minimum standard, which it seems they're attempting to work towards now, is the bare minimum the NCAA should do, because not everyone has the same resources financially. So I don't think you can expect that, you know, App State will be able to do exactly the same thing as Ohio State. But that being said, for where we're at today in modern times, they need to put a minimum standard, an amount, a frequency of testing that's in place, the type of personnel who needs to be around your program on a regular basis as these things are happening, and how that needs to be communicated to athletes, to their parents. I think some of those would go towards what I think should be a minimum standard before you're saying you're actually going to allow folks back onto the competitive field or court.
Anthony, what's it been like for you watching what's happened with Iowa? You know, hearing all the stories and the tales that have been told, both published on Facebook and different players coming out. And are you in touch with anyone there? We know Chris Doyle has been fired, the former strength and conditioning coach, and those allegations are very disturbing. Did you face any of this stuff? Have you been in touch with people? What's your take on all of this?
So I had Hayden Fry and his staff my first 2 years at Iowa, and then Kirk Ferentz and Chris Doyle came in going into my junior year. So my last 2 years at Iowa, I had Ferentz and Doyle and a number of coaches who are actually still there now. Some of them are guys who were teammates of mine there. So, yes, I'm still in close contact with the program. As a disclaimer, Kirk Ferentz is a guy who every time I see him, I say, hey, I love you, coach, and we still stay in touch at this point and have communicated throughout the last few weeks here. I think that I said immediately that the day all this was breaking, I never saw Chris Doyle myself as what I would term as a racist. And there's a variety of ways that me, friends of mine have debated over the years just how strictly I suppose you would define that term. But did I see him make inappropriate comments? Yeah. Have I seen him say things that I don't think he'd say to a white player that he said to a black player? Yes. And nothing I would say to the gravity of what some of the younger players, the more recent Iowa grads, have experienced there. But I have no problem believing a lot of the stories that have come out of there, because, as you guys know, I mean, the locker rooms, weight rooms, whatever, tend to be a fairly inappropriate communication environment anyway, and there's lines that get crossed, and that doesn't make it okay. That doesn't mean it's right. And especially when you have, whether you're talking about Kirk Ferentz, the head coach, Chris Doyle, the strength coach, to me, it is a monumental responsibility when folks are sending their teenagers off to you and saying, all right, you got them for the next 3 years, 5 years, whatever the case may be, and hopefully they're better by the time you send them back to me or we all send them off into the world. So that matters. And as was the case with Chris Doyle, if that trust is violated, if folks are feeling like they didn't have the experience that they thought they should have, and especially for some of the specifics that we heard about the way he communicated with players, I don't have any problem with them reaching the separation agreement where he's no longer the head strength coach there.
Did they go far enough, Anthony? I know you're a rational guy, but Kirk Ferentz is the head coach, and head coaches are responsible for everything that happens, you know, under their watch during their time there in their program, and he remains the head coach.
It's a valid question. One thing, the internal and external investigations are ongoing right now. So whether we're talking Kirk Ferentz as the head coach, his son / offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz has continued to come up in some public, you know, outcry from former players who dealt with him as well. Here's my thought. I believe, and again, I'm operating from a bias here, from how I see Kirk Ferentz, but I believe that at what's going to be 65 years old by the time the football season rolls around, he's been at Iowa, this would be his 22nd season, assuming he continues to be the head coach. But there are things that need to change about Iowa football to make everyone feel included, to make everyone feel like as an individual, that they don't have to become this completely different person. There were some of those changes, some of those adjustments that Kirk Ferentz was already beginning to make. A bit of it between himself and the athletic director, Gary Barta, was maybe like sort of turning a battleship. What wasn't happening with the speed, with the urgency that made everyone comfortable. And now that some of these reports have come out publicly, even something as simple as what was a Twitter ban, where his players weren't allowed to be on Twitter, that's been lifted. And, you know, guys can communicate, especially about what's happening in modern times. And we see around college sports where players voicing their opinion, guys having a voice, guys feeling like they can influence their journey, whether it's dealing with their coaches or experiences around their campus. That's important. And I think that's a great thing. And it will continue to help, I think, move things down the line of name, image, and likeness becoming a reality, as some folks are starting to vote that into law. So allowing his players to feel like they do have personal agency is a big deal. And it in some ways goes against this very rigid sort of team first approach that Ferentz has already taken that has led to a lot of success since he's been at Iowa. But to relax a bit of that, so a lot of guys who felt like they couldn't be themselves, their genuine selves, I do think it's going to lead to positive things. And I think my thought is Kirk Ferentz can be a part of that change. And frankly, guys, if he is, as a white guy in his mid-60s, and for the Iowa fan base to see him willing to listen, to change, to adjust, to hear his players on things like this, especially as it relates to potentially kneeling during the national anthem, or even if it's not kneeling, just some other team sort of unified signal that may take place during the anthem amongst Iowa football players, to allow things like that to happen, that's important. I think that could lead to a big perception of the change, as opposed to someone else having to come in and lead that.
Anthony, thanks a ton. I wish we had more time. There's a lot there, and we didn't get to everything, but really appreciate your time.
Great stuff.
Well, David, I appreciate you guys.
That is Anthony Heron. He's a very thoughtful person, and a lot of good stuff there. I really wanted to get into more. Unfortunately, we have to we have to bow out. Don't forget, Dan Bernstein is going to be talking to Ian Happ at 9 o'clock. There's a lot of interesting information that's come up now with Rob Manfred. I'll be very curious to hear how Ian Happ addressed that. And we are obviously very thankful to everyone for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
It means a lot to us. Thanks to Dustin Rhodes.
Hey, is this heaven?
No. It's Iowa.
It's Dustin. And obviously, Ray, thank you, buddy, filling in great for Kevin. We miss Kevin, but bless you, Ray.
I'd like to see Nagy's play calling be a little less predictable.
And Jordan Malley was very kind this morning. Great to get up with us, Jordan. Did a great job on the 5 and 5. Really appreciate your hard work.
Get somebody who can catch the ball, and those numbers for Trubisky go up.
David, enjoy your national holiday. God bless you and the Haws, and happy 4th of July.
You too, Mully. Take care.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.